Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello.
Track, and I want to thank Mr. Kevin MacLeod for our little reggae classic and welcome you all to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and I apologize for our late start, but I'm having a little technical difficulty with my internet connection, so please bear with me. But I want to welcome everybody because I can see the board now. I couldn't before. I was all on time, but apparently something was going wrong. So welcome to my fans calling in and those listening online and those who may come by later. I am just exuberant to be here again. You know, every week is a celebration for me. And I am particularly excited when I'm learning new things about some very important people of the past, because as I mature, I'm getting more interested in history. So tonight we're going to conclude bringing to life our celebrity. I want to call him a celebrity now, that we have been talking about since last week. There wasn't enough time to really give all the details about him. And if the fans will remember, or if you're on my list, you would get the promo about Mr. Hector Joseph, who was a King's Counsel and the first man of color to act in a capacity as an attorney general in British Guyana. So if you remember last week, I apologize because we've been talking about a couple of Josephs for a few weeks now. The first being, I think his name was Matthew Joseph, who could trace his heritage through his father from a tribe in Africa. And he went as far not only being a renowned teacher in Kingston, but he wrote a book. He went to London and wrote a book of poetry. And I think that was a remarkable feat at that time, to be coming, you know, from slavery itself, being born in slavery and then accomplishing that. There was not a lot of information about his immediate family because, as the fans will know, I am using the material of Dr. Joy Lumsden. And a lot of these stories she's piecing together from different sources, whether it's the newspaper or a library or a church or a school. So there was not really a lot of information as I saw it on his family, but it's obviously he's had children because I inadvertently thought this man, Hector Joseph, was Matthew Joseph's son, but it was an error on my part. His son, as I explained last week, was H.M. Spencer Joseph, who worked as a teacher for some time and a lancer there for some time, but eventually went to London in 1896 and was called to the bar in 1899. Which was really one of the dreams of his father, who was born in slavery. So, you know, as I'm doing my little sidebars, as I really get to discover these people, I'm trying to find the lessons from the past that can really encourage us now in the present, and hopefully we'll do the same for the next generation as they discover all of this neat information about our heritage. So this Mr. Hector Joseph's father owned property in St. Andrew and had a business actually at Matilda's Corner. As a matter of fact, he grew pineapples. He owned 27 acres of land on which he grew pineapples. So last week I talked about, you know, the brilliance of this man, even though academically he did not really soar in school so much. But he really refined his art or his knowledge of the law. And I think because of just who he was as a person, he did some remarkable things and was thought very highly about. So where I'm picking up this week is actually on some of the arguments that were being put forth on between England, I suppose, and Guyana and Jamaica once he was recommended for the post as Attorney General, because he had acted in an assistant capacity in Jamaica during, you know, his years of being involved in the law. But I want to start off now with some of Dr. Lumsden's findings. The result of Joseph's excellent education was his winning of the Jamaican scholarship. Well, I think I covered that already. I'm reading my wrong papers. And this is a good time to tell the fans that you're listening to Backyard Lavish. And Margaret Marshall is quite a senior. I'm a passionate one, though. I call myself the passionate senior. I'm passionate about life and right now about history and the Jamaican culture that I was raised in. So let me get my act together here. Okay. Mr. A.R.F. Weber, W-E-B-B-E-R, and I'm going in details to spell names and try to pronounce them properly because I know that there are perhaps some offsprings of some of these people that might be scattered all over the world. And my hope is that somehow the younger generation will get an urge to look into their past and perhaps help Dr. Lumsden filling some gaps that they might be able to because of stories, because of letters, because of finding out something. So I know there's all sorts of connection between Jamaica, England, Australia, just all over the world. So I'm spelling names and trying to connect the dots. Hopefully the dots will be connected even long after I'm gone. So Mr. A.R.F. Weber, on behalf of the financial representatives, concurred. They all bear testimony to the tact and courtesy with which the Attorney General received them whenever they had to differ from him in the court or call on him at his chamber and pester him with their views. They all hoped that if in the order of things he was ordered back to British Guiana, he would feel that his welcome would be just as warm, and their regrets were profound now that the ordering of things took him from them. So apparently he was ordered back to Jamaica then, I suppose. He was a product of a splendid country and was a splendid man. My sidebar. I am just intrigued. I don't know if any of the other listeners are, by the way writers described people and events then. You know, they just used some very luscious words. Back to the article. The officer administering the government between governors, and this man's name is P-O-P-H-A-M, Papam Lobb, L-O-B-B, said that he could never want to find anyone who showed more courtesy, good nature, and readiness to oblige than he found in Mr. Josephs. And he was astonished at the extraordinary mastery which he found Mr. Joseph had over his materials. There seemed no need to doubt that these expressions of esteem were sincere. Joseph was indeed welcome back when he returned as Attorney General some years later. As in Jamaica, Hector Joseph became involved in a number of public service organizations. In many instances, he was involved in the same areas the Boy Scouts, the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, the YMCA, the Salvation Army, all received his support. He chaired functions and held offices in some. His wife, who had joined him with their two daughters soon after his arrival, was also present at many functions of these societies. This is the first time I heard any mention of a wife. They both attended other functions such as weddings and receptions together. Hector Joseph presided at special occasions such as entertainment in aid of victims of fire. He gave lectures on Jamaica. He, however, was unable to attend a meeting of the BJ Labor Union at which the Garveyite Dr. Tobit, T-O-B-B-I-T-T, was to speak. Understandably, given his official position, one marked omission from this record of public activity is any mention of participation in any Masonic functions. Whether this is a reflection of the position of Freemasonry in Guyana or of the influence of his wife, a devout Catholic, I do not know. That is Dr. Lumsden giving her opinion there. It is another point to be further researched. A final item of note in relation to the impact Joseph made on his first day in British Guyana arose in conjunction with the Wood Commission, which visited in 1922. Clearly, the commission's activity and objectives were not well understood by many ordinary people, and some strange rumors began to circulate as to its real purpose. The coincidental presence of Dr. Tobit only added to the confusion. An indication of the impact that Joseph had made was the story that Major Wood is engaged in the task of arranging for the creation of a West Indian empire with the Attorney General of this country as the first emperor. So I gather that was the rumor in Guyana at the time, because, you know, this Dr. Tobit was apparently involved in Garveyism or something going back to Africa. Hector Joseph was upstaging Marcus Garvey. Joseph's return to Jamaica after a long leave in Britain and on the continent with his wife and daughters, he continued to fill his previous position as Assistant Attorney General and also resumed his involvement with various public service organizations, such as the ones I mentioned before. He appeared in court with other prominent Jamaican barristers of that period, such as A.J.G. Smith, and I'm sure many of you would recognize this one, N.W. Manley, sometimes on the same side and sometimes opposing them. During this period, Joseph was appointed as an acted puny judge and sat on the Supreme Court bench, and I think that means associate judge. He was an acting puny judge up to the time that he took up his appointment to the post of Attorney General in Guyana, which had been vacated finally by Sir Joseph Noonan, N-U-N-A-N. This appointment was announced in April of 1925, and Joseph left Jamaica for Guyana in mid-October. When the question of this permanent appointment in British Guyana came up in February of 1925, the topic of color was strongly raised with the Colonial Office in contradiction to the virtual lack of concern at the time of his earlier acting appointment. The retiring Attorney General Noonan was firmly opposed to Joseph's appointment, in large part possibly on the grounds of his color and the problems he would cause among the legal profession in the colony. The then governor, Sir Graeme Thompson, was also opposed, and he asked very clearly that if the appointment was made from outside the colony, the man should be of pure European origin. In a confidential telegram 2 months later, Thompson expanded on his reasons for opposing the appointment. A great deal of politics, this is Thompson talking, a great deal of political power in this colony rests with the colored lawyers who have in the past sought to bring undue influence to bear on the Attorney General. This makes it essential that the holder of the office should be a man of strength of character and moral courage. While appreciating fully the policy of his magistrate's government as regards gradual introduction of colored race into the higher appointments, I would regard the appointment contemplated with misgivings unless you are absolutely satisfied that Joseph possesses the above-mentioned qualities. I am informed, moreover, on reliable authority that the appointment of the person named would not be welcome by the colored members of his own profession. Now, this is what the then white governor, I suppose, was writing to the magistrate in England, saying that the colored lawyers in Guyana would not appreciate a black attorney general. Interesting. Experience has shown that he would not be accepted socially by the European community in the manner to which his position would entitle him, an attitude which efforts on my part would, I fear, fall maternally to modify, and which would prevent him from acquiring the local knowledge which I venture to think a man in his position should possess. Thompson's telegram raised a number of issues with the colonial office officials, ready to discount. C.R. Darley, and she has a question sign, it must be the spelling of his name, who backed the claims of colored applications throughout these exchanges, stated firmly that unless the Secretary of State sometimes disagree, the drawbacks of appointed colored officers, they will be confirmed to junior post. There will scarcely ever be a stronger case than Joseph's, and probably his unpopularity with the local bar is due to a certain independence. Other officials concurred. Sir G. Grindle, recalled recommendations from Jamaica, and Sir H. Reed, recalling Governor Colette's backing for Joseph, wrote, "I think one governor may cancel the other, and Mr. Joseph's merit tip the balance. Mr. Wamsley Gore perhaps clinched the matter with, I know Mr. Joseph personally. He is an exceptional man. Some of the colonial office officials by that time seem, however, to have been in favor of the idea of appointing West Indians, especially colored and black men, if they were adequately qualified as a deliberate policy of opening up the service to all, regardless of race. D-A-R-N-L-E-Y. Darnley, in particular, could always be depending upon to support Joseph. In countering the objections of Noonan and Thompson, he outlined a stance which seems to run counter to some extent to previous concerns about color. In his comment on Thompson's dispatch of January in 1925, he wrote to Sir G. Grindal, and this is what he wrote: "In spite of occasional difficulties, the feeling between the white and colored races is probably better in the West Indies than anywhere else in the world. This is largely due to the fact that there has been a career open to genuine talent. This is clearly a case in which the door ought not to be closed, and I recommend that Mr. Joseph be considered on his merits with such other candidates as may be forthcoming, and that in the event of his being selected, it should be explained to the governor that the Secretary of State considered that there are strong reasons of policy and justice why colored officers of outstanding merit should not be excluded from consideration for such appointments." Although the first two sentences of this comment hardly seem to tally with opinions expressed by Thompson and Noonan or with other notes of colonial office officials, the latter part sets out a clear policy line that the governor is expected to accept and follow. It is interesting to note that in this ongoing discussion of Joseph and his situation, it is Governor Colette who supports a colored applicant, while Governor Thompson decisively opposes him. In Harold Lutman's book, From Colonialism to Cooperative Republic, Colette is shown as being distinctly unpopular in British Guyana for his arbitrary and dictatorial administration, while Thompson was seen as more approachable and more disposed towards the Guyanese people. This view of Thompson is not borne out in a reading of his dispatches. In May of 1925, Thompson was writing to the Secretary of State, complaining in the bitterest terms of the electives in the combined court, using terms to the Secretary of State, terms such as holy, venal, and unscrupulous, thoroughly dishonest, ignorant, and opinionated, and devoid of any stability of character to describe various elected members. It was probably well for British Guyana and for Hector Joseph that a governor so out of tune with the colony remained there for less than 2 years. When Joseph left Jamaica, there were expressions of regrets that he was leaving the island again. In April, when the possible appointment was first announced, the Gleaner editorial wrote an article titled "A Loss to Jamaica," characterizing him as a man learned in the law, a man naturally adapted by his intellectual affinities and directions to be a lawyer, a keen analytic thinker, a patient, thoughtful, earnest man. It also spoke of his
essential modesty, his undisturbed calmness and balance of mind and temperament, his simple dignity, his pleasant friendliness. In October, he was on the point of leaving, a Gleaner columnist wrote, on his point of leaving, a Gleaner columnist wrote, "Au revoir, Mr. Justice Joseph, one of the ablest and most talented sons of Jamaica, departs from these shores on Monday to take up duties in British Guiana as Attorney General. Jamaica's loss is Guyana's gain. We shall follow his progress in the sister colony with more than passing interest and with the hope that he shall come back to his native land in the near future to adorn its bench in the highest and most coveted position." In response to another such farewell, Joseph, after thanking his well-wishers for their kindness and good wishes, said he was going to a colony in which he had served already, so that he was not going as a stranger. And so indeed it proved. He fitted back into the Guyanese scene with barely a ripple, almost as if he had never left. In part, this ease of return may have been due to the general relief in the colony at seeing the back of his predecessor. That's funny. Noonan had spent much of his time outside the colony on various missions, had gained a very unsavory reputation in some quarters as a kingmaker who had contrived the removal of a governor and a colonial secretary, and had been described by Governor Thompson as being, as early in 1925, as mentally unstable and speaking and acting irrationally. A man of Joseph's character must have seen a welcome change. So let me just take a break there now and put in some of my sidebars. I don't know about the listeners, but I just love the language or the verbiage they used in their description and how they spoke of each other and to each other. But it's obvious that Mr. Noonan, who was the European Attorney General, was not well-liked. And I think it was such a feat to be replaced, not by a mixed person, as they would call them if they were of two different races that during those time, colored, but of a genuine black African man. In those days, it must have been something else. And as I read this documentation, you know, and we hear all of the talk about this man's passion and character and just who he was as a person. And I am sure that he knew some of these obstacles that came his way for this particular job that he has. That was the first in history to be a King's Counsel and have that position. So I am sure he was aware that it didn't come without some sort of resentment on the part of many people. But from what I gathered just from going through the article, which I'll hopefully read the rest to you, is that it didn't faze him a bit. Whereas there has been stories I've read about some previous one of our brothers, you know, who attained. There's a story I did, I think I call it Trading Places, where one ex-slave was sort of
sent as an experiment to England to be educated, and this count or somebody just wanted to see if a African could absorb the teachings in England at the time, as could an English person, you know, someone of pure white. And it proved that he could. The only difference is when he came back to Jamaica, he sort of had an attitude as if he was so much bigger and better and, you know, different from his peers. So he was not well liked, you know, in his performance when he came back to Jamaica. Another thing I thought was significant, as it mentioned in this article, is that during that period, I think a lot of black men and colored men and even white men that were born in Jamaica went to England to be trained, went to college there, and not all of them returned. You know, some went to Africa, some stayed in England, some went to Australia, and there are several stories I've done on, you know, many of them that never went back to Jamaica after they got their degrees, whether from Cambridge or Oxford. So it's interesting that he returned, you know, and I think even that is happening now. During my time, I know there were a lot of people who went back, went to college, various parts of the world, and they remained there or went someplace else, and they did not go back to Jamaica to, you know, live the rest of their lives. Well, I could be considered one of them too. So anyway, be that as it may, I'm going to ask anybody, one on the board now, or if you're listening online, first of all, let me take a breath to say you are listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each week on a Thursday at 8 o'clock, where we celebrate. We celebrate and the rich culture of Jamaica, land we love. And my passion right now is to bring to life and light some people who lived long before my time, that I never knew a thing about, that I'm being introduced to by our historians, that I have discovered through the wonderful use of Mr. Google, who I just absolutely adore. I have been introduced to Dr. Lumsden, Dr. Rebecca Tortello, Miss Senior, who wrote the book. I've interviewed several people about their school days in Jamaica, seniors and not so senior seniors, and have just learned so much, because during my time of growing up in Jamaica, if you were born in Kingston, usually you were raised in Kingston, and the only opportunity you had of going out in the country is that you would go to the country part of the island that you're parents were born. So if your parents were born in one parish and she or he had siblings there, you would possibly go to that part of the island and visit and get to know a little bit about that village. And most time it was totally different from Kingston, because Kingston in those days were the top of the world, and we were like New York is to the rest of America. And since I'm a Kingstonian, born under the clock, literally, because I was born in St. Andrew, I went to Westmoreland, to Savlamar, and perhaps, I don't even remember ever going to Montego Bay. I went to Negril, but we didn't get around a whole lot like everybody's getting around now, because transportation was different. We took the diesel or the train, or the truck, I suppose. And, you know, you didn't have all the taxes that you have now. The roads were not the same. So everything was different. And I'm doing all of this so that the young people might think they're having it hard, but they're having it good, because, you know, it was a lot more difficult even getting around the island in the 40s and 50s. So with that said, again, I want to ask any of the listeners of the callers in if you would like to join the Labrish and put in your little sidebar, as I call mine. Please feel free to do so by hitting 1 on your telephone, and that will indicate to me that you have something to say. If it's nothing more than hello, how are you? I'm enjoying it. So we're here each week, and what I'm doing, or what I have been doing for the past couple of weeks, is to use the research of Dr. Joy Lumsden, who actually this segment is called almost the invisible people, or the invisible black people, because there are so many people of color who did so many great things in the early days, and somehow it seems that they're not well known. So I'm hoping that by verbalizing what some of the historians have documented, which is all available online if you just use Mr. Google or whoever else you use for your search engines, you will definitely find a lot of wonderful material. But we want to stick to the authentic ones that are backed up with some sort of documentations. Because we know, just like I put in my sidebar and say how I feel about something, sometimes it's not always the way it is, but it's just an opinion. And if you really want the true story, then it's better to go to the right source. So with that said, I have just been very, very pleased at bringing to life the story of Mr. Hector Joseph. And from reading here that he had a wife and two daughters who returned with him and traveled, and they were also social and involved in things, I am of the opinion that there might be some of his descendants, some parts of the world, that might not necessarily know their connection to their past. And if that is so, I would really, and they stumble on this information, I would really love for them to give a comment or a shout out to Dr. Lumsden, and they can always find me on backyardlabrish.com. There is a way that you can send a message, a note. And I am always curious to know how the listeners, what the listeners would like to hear me talk about. You know, I always mention that because we're not political, I don't have any agenda. This show is not supported by any or, you know, authorized by anybody but me. I research this. And I try to be as accurate as possible when I'm using the historian's material. That's why I spell and try to pronounce and not misrepresent. But all the little sidebars are mine. And I just like to use this medium to express myself. And at the same time, I hope this will encourage seniors of my time to really try and embrace this new technology that we've been blessed with. Hey, we're still on the planet, you know, and we can't fight it, so we might as well join it. And it's not as difficult as it may seem. And because I believe that no matter how old we are, we should always be learning and trying to expand, you know, on what we have, share as much as we can with the people who want to listen to us or want to get information from us. I remember at one time, one of my aunts who I really adored, I think she was going through a little, perhaps, loneliness or something, but I would ask her questions, and she'd say, "What do you want to know that for?" You know, as if she was surprised and almost sounded like sometimes she wanted to, was a little annoyed that I was asking her to go back in our member back and tell me a story. So for those of us who like to tell stories, it is really priceless if you have the ability and the occasion to share with the next generation. Even if they don't belong to you, they don't have to be your children, you know, or your family. But you know, as curious as I am now to know what happened 100 years ago, especially things that I can celebrate, I am sure that the time will come, even though they may not seem to have an interest, it will come when they will. So I encourage you to, you know, sort of get friendly with the great technology that we have available to us. So let me just see if I can tie up. I don't have any hands going up. So I take that as an indication that you're just listening and don't want to join the labrish. So I'm going to give you a little more info about this wonderful, honorable Hector Josephs. And it's spelled sometime with an S to the end and other times without an S. And this is what Dr. Lumsden mentioned. That's, you know, it's sort of, I don't know if it's a misprint, but either one of them, it does make any difference. I think that if anyone can connect to the story and get something from it, you know, I know I get a lot. And if you can, if you know of anyone with that name, whether it ends with an S or not, they might want to check out about these three different Josephs that we have mentioned last couple of weeks. So let me get back to some of the wonderful things that was said about this gentleman. Okay. Let me tell you now that in October of 1933, Sir Edward Denham, the then governor, wrote to the colonel when the colonial office when the vacancy was coming up. Joseph, a really able attorney general, would, I know, like to retire as chief justice, but though I consider he would make a very good one, he will be 62 next February, and he is tiring. We want a younger man, as well as in court work. His legal expertise was important in the drafting of law. According to Van Sertoma, to British Guiana, he had bequeathed a legacy of legislation and a variety of topics as difficult as they are manifold. In a rather ambivalent editorial in 1933, when Joseph was going on leave and was thought possibly to be retiring, the Tribune pointed to the rent restriction ordinance and the Industrial and Provincial Societies ordinance as his two most valuable achievements. And one newspaper referred to the occasions when Joseph stoutly opposed the governor over legislation, as on the question of doing away with equal leave facilities for Creole and British officials, which was mooted by the governor, and they have his name, Giddensburg or something. So as I understand this, in Guyana then, they wanted to do something about the leaves. And we know, we West Indian know what a leave is, vacation. Americans might not know it as vacation. We said we're going on leave. So that's what they were referring to here. And apparently they wanted to shorten it for certain people. And he was very successful in getting that not done. So it's quite obvious that he was a very fair-minded person, even though, and interpreted the law in a good way. Because, you know, even though the law is made by the legislator, it's the interpretation that really gets the execution done, just as it is now with our high court here in the United States interpreting the law. And sometimes they don't always agree, you know, on what it means. So that really brings me to the point where it's so important to clearly communicate what we mean. So even within our families and our friends, so we don't need a panel of people to interpret what we say. But the people we're talking to know exactly what we're saying. So, okay, the amount and scope of the, let me get my bearings here, the amount and scope of the other measures on behalf of the government and the people of the colony. The amount and scope, just a minute here, of the work, that Joseph did is clear from his contributions to debates in the legislative bodies and from the draft law which appear in the dispatches to the colonial office. This work deserves a far more detailed study than this brief comment. This is what Dr. Lumsden is saying in this article. And she delivered this as a speech to some conference she went to some time ago. If you're on my promo list, you know all of that details is there. He also gave invaluable advice and support to successive governors, but in the latter years became slower in his response to queries. It is an issue over a possible... criminal libel suit against the New Daily Chronicle for portraying a donkey dressed in the governor's uniform, Joseph at first advised prosecution, but according to the governor's, to Governor Norcott, the Attorney General's was slow, very slow, in advising, although he was all for action eventually. The governor then asked if the editor should be warned against repeating the offense, the idea of prosecuting having been dropped. But at the time of writing, that wise but tortoise-like lawyer is still pondering his advice. Another area of involvement worthy of consideration was Joseph's participation in a number of committees and commissions which investigated and made reports on various significant aspects of Guyanese affairs. He made an innovative report containing proposals for changes in local administration in 1931. Which, in spite of many promises, had not been put in place. He served on the Constitutional Commission in 1927, which radically altered the legislature, and was chairman of the Labor Commission, which investigated the conditions which were leading to labor unrest in 1936. He was still involved with the report of this commission when he was incapacitated by the heart condition which caused his death later in 1936. I was 1 year old then. Wow. Norcott, N-O-R-T-H-C-O-T-E, that's the name of the man, commented, "It is unfortunate that the chairman, Mr. Hector Joseph, King's counsel, a black man, was unable to take part in the participation of this report. Though he concurred generally in the views of the other commissioners, he was a sick man and had since then died. I have read the evidence, and he appeared to have conducted the inquiry very ably and to have kept the representatives of the British Guiana Sugar Producers Association in order. Another official noted that he had to resist a suggestion by Joseph that he should take the draft, which is a report, to Jamaica to complete. 5 weeks after the comment was made, Hector Joseph was dead. During his career, especially in British Guiana, Joseph had successfully made himself all things to all men. When he left the colony and after his death, the breath of the respect for him was clear from the many tributes from very varied sections of the community. The Negro Progress Convention wrote, "Mr. Joseph was not only a distinguished West Indian, but a great Negro. Since his appointment to the Attorney Generalship of this country 11 years ago, he had done a good deed to promote the welfare of the people of this country. He performed his duty with such meticulous care, thoughtfulness, and impartiality that he brought credit to his race. The name of the late Mr. Hector Joseph was a household word in this country. The unassuming and charming disposition of the man made him a popular figure among every sector of the community. His successor, J.B. Nihil, N-I-H-I-L-L, speaking to the Hindu Religious Society, said, "I had already heard details of the work of the society from my predecessor, Mr. Hector Joseph, whom I know you all knew and loved. He told me of the really wonderful development and progress with which this work has shown in the years in which he was in this colony. The president of the Chamber of Commerce and Development Association after Joseph's death said that the chamber has special reason to deplore his loss, as from the very inception of the chamber, the late Mr. Hector Joseph was one of its very good friends and had worked hard on the project of having the chamber incorporated once funds was available. Even the Tribune, which had not always treated Joseph very kindly, printed laudatory verses at the time of his death, which included the line, 'Great star of African prodigy.' The Daily Chronicle editorial on the occasion of Joseph's departure in August of 1936 made clear the significance of his career. Why decorations from the king, such as were rewarded to his predecessors, should have so seduously avoided him. We cannot, of course, speak with any authority, and perhaps it is important to inquire, but Mr. Joseph may probably feel that of more importance than titles is the fact that his career here must have convinced the colonial office of a few things. He is of the West Indian earthy, and would be complete without nothing would, and we would not be complete without asking once again whether it would not be advisable for the colonial office to extend the practice of filling such posts in the West Indies from the ranks of the permanent residents of the West Indies. There is no lack of talented British Guyanese lawyers who would have been well able to carry on the work of Attorney General as well as any European available. While this is very relevant assessment of Joseph's significance, it seemed only right to end with his own expression of what was clearly his personal philosophy as presented in a talk on citizenship to the Anglican East Indian Mission Young Men's Guild in 1935. So what we're going to do now, folks, is to end it, as Dr. Lumsden rightly say, with the Honorable Hector Joseph's own philosophy, and I read it to you. We cannot have our individualities. We could have our race pride. Now let me start again. We could have our individualities. We could have our race pride, certainly, and the religion of our race, etc. Mr. Joseph said, but it is no good fencing up ourselves with barbed wire entanglement so that we do not come into contact with the races of the world and the race of the people around us. People who isolate themselves and did not come into contact with others retrograded and faded away. He was sure in the 14 years he was in this country that had changed. They had advanced in that respect. He urged all Guyanese to be patriotic, to have a feeling of nationhood, to take a pride in their country, and sink all feelings of race in that broader patriotism. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, being the philosophy of this great man, I encourage you to listen, to do some research on Dr. Lumsden's paper and really take from it what can encourage you to be your best. And I don't see any hands up. So with that said, I am going to say good night, and as I end each show, make it a great week, and I'll see you next Thursday at 8 o'clock on Backyard Lavish. Bye.